You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 4th of December, 2025, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I'm very pleased to say Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rusjournal.org is back from his Thanksgiving holiday to join us today to give us his learned views on geopolitics. Matt, how are you doing? Thank you very much for coming on the show once again.
Well, I still can't get over the fact that we're doing this, you know, just like it was years ago. I am joined, however, by Marcel, my cat, who is 6 inches from the microphone. It's just the two of us. We'll be doing this together today. Poor Marcel is sick. He has cancer, and we're in his mouth, no less. So we feed him by hand. But he's doing really well, and he's, you know, very much attached. He's 11 years old. So it'll be a tag team today. So I hope you don't mind.
That's all right. So, if we hear any meowing noises, we know what it is. It's the cat. It's not your stomach. Well, today we're going to be looking at, this call to take away the Russian assets, or the Russian assets that are held by the EU, and to give them all to Ukraine, because this is obviously a criminal act, and it also seems it would totally upset all the financial markets. So we've got three articles that we're going to use, and they're all from Sputnik Globe, so they do come from Russian sources. And the first one is from the 15th of November, and the headline is Euroclear CEO warns of global investment impact amidst EU plans to seize Russian assets. CEO Valery Urban said that the European Commission's threats to seize Russian central bank assets are causing concern among many clients, including Arab and Chinese investors, and will impact investments in the European Union. I meet with many clients and government representatives. I can tell you that the issue of confiscating Russian assets is causing serious concern for many. Our Chinese and Arab partners have openly expressed this. They are closely monitoring the situation. Until now, we've made every effort to maintain their trust, and they appreciate it, Euroclear CEO Valery Urban told a French newspaper. Urban added that if this trust begins to erode, the consequences could quickly hit Europe itself. Global investors will invest less in the Eurozone. This will affect all of Europe's financing needs, defence, green transition and digital transformation, said the Euroclear chief. So effectively, they've just seized all the Russian assets, not assets belonging to the government, I don't think, but actually individual Russian assets or individual Russian people that had assets in Europe. They've all been seized. They were seized at the start of the special military operation in Ukraine. And now the EU and I guess the coalition of the willing, as Keir Starmer calls it, they want to take all of that money and just hand it over to Ukraine, which is just large scale theft. It doesn't belong to them to do that. And to do that would mean that there would be instant instability in the market, because no other country would be able to trust the West's banks, that if they didn't have a quarrel with their neighbouring country, that all of their assets could just be taken. I mean, that's the crux of the issue, isn't it, Matt? That nobody would want to invest in the West any longer if they were to fear that if they were to do that, it could just all get stolen from them, breaking all international law, I would have thought, as well.
Yep, there's no question. And it's not an accident that she talks about Arab and Chinese investors. China gets a sanction once in a while. They're always in trouble with the Americans. They're always angry. It's very easy to see how some of theirs may be taken as well. And, of course, the Arabs. At any moment, an Arab government can piss off the U.S. over Israel and get sanctioned. So mentioning those two is important, but it refers to everybody. If the, you know, EU doesn't like you, they put sanctions on you, whatever you have invested is now theirs. Even the government of Belgium is not keen on this. And this issue has been going on for 2 years. And still there's been no resolution. So obviously this isn't an easy thing to do. Russia's response has always been about, you know, international law, which really doesn't mean much. But when it comes down to investing, yeah, I mean, the Russians have also stated, yeah, like you say, this is going to be going to create instability. If this actually happens and it's used, just stolen to buy weapons for, well, I don't know where they get the weapons from. The West is totally tapped out, but for a long lost war. So it's really for no good reason. And Euroclear, you know, Euroclear is a clearinghouse, but most people don't really, I've never heard of it before. I come across it once in a while, but, the very international law that the West talks about all the time would be immediately broken. But it would just be one more thing. That contradiction in the West understanding of warfare. So for 2 years, this has been going on and nothing has happened. There's a lot of legal problems. And, of course, there's Hungary that vetoes it all the time. So it just kind of sits immobile without having much purpose. So now, okay, I think the amount here, it goes up and down. Just, you know, 200 billion euros, something like that. 140, 300, the numbers all over the place. These assets, a lot of these assets are debt, which shouldn't surprise you. Not having a green transition, yeah. And, you know, Europe is completely broke. The U.S. is broke. Critical supplies of critical, you know, everything from ammunition on down. You know, war material is absolutely, absolute today is critical. They, you know, this stuff gets vaporized the minute it gets to Ukraine. The government of Belgium says it doesn't want this money to be used for a lost war. So, but the government of Belgium doesn't really matter in a lot of this stuff. And you know, anybody who's invested there who may get into some kind of trouble can have their assets seized at any time. And not just seized, but then spent. I mean, I know in warfare, you know, like in Germany, you had the, you know, foreign assets were placed in a specific bureaucracy and frozen. This is different. This is, you know, freeze it and then you spend it. You take it and use it on something. So this is really a bizarre thing. But the very fact that nothing has happened over 2 years suggests that that nothing has that this is very more difficult than people realize. And thank God for Hungary, because they've been vetoing this for a while. They're working on a workaround, they call it, but so that's another reason why it's lasted for so long. It's typical, you know, Western hypocrisy.
Well, you know what it makes me wonder? I wonder how many other countries have had their assets frozen, because the last time I can remember this happening was in 2011, and they froze the Libyan Sovereign Wealth Fund. And as far as I'm aware, nothing has been said about that since. Where has all that money gone? I mean, that was billions of dollars. Do you know anything about the Libyan sovereign wealth fund, Matt, just before we move on to the next paragraph here? What happened to that?
Off the top of my head, now that there is no functional government in Libya whatsoever, which was, you know, the plan, it's up for grabs. It's not like, you know, they have a central bank, of course, controlled by the West, you know, Western bankers. So it automatically became theirs once Gaddafi was overthrown. And, you know, having that much invested in the Libyan case, you know, shows the prosperity of that country. They had a huge trade surplus, always did. We all know about Gaddafi's social nationalism and everything else. But once he was gone, not just him, but the government was gone. Now, there is no government, but there is some version of a central bank. It automatically became, whoever controlled that central bank. It was, of course, the state when Gaddafi was alive. But now, of course, it's Western and, you know, American and British bankers. But the fact that it was so much money, I forget exactly the amount, but it just showed the prosperity of the country. It didn't get a lot of press at the time. But since that entire system is gone, it became the property of the Western banks who created the new central bank in Libya.
Yeah, because I can remember them saying, oh, well, it's too unstable for us to release that money. The country itself is too unstable for the sovereign wealth fund to go back to the people that are running it now. So I guess what you were saying there is, well, it's still there in the banks. So it's still there being used by the banks, I guess, by the banks of the West. Perhaps it's something else we should look into. Next from this article here, the European Commission is obsessively trying to gain EU countries' approval for using Russia's sovereign assets for Ukraine. The amount in question is around 140 billion euros, intended as a special reparations loan that Ukraine is supposed to repay after the conflict, but only if Russia compensates it for material damage. Belgium opposes this, fearing legal consequences. Russian Foreign Ministry spokesperson Maria Zakharova stated on November 12th that Belgium understands the criminal nature of imposing the idea of a reparations loan to Ukraine using Russian assets and knows it will face retaliatory actions from Moscow. And this is highly illegal, isn't it? I mean, how can Ukraine use Russian assets to get a loan? It's like getting you applying for a loan and saying, well, I'll use my neighbor's house as the asset to secure the loan, isn't it?
That's exactly it. You know, Germany is another country that's been really iffy about this. And one of the main reasons is more World War II reparation stuff. They don't want that floodgate opened again. Germany's been all over the place on the issue. But at least as of, you know, last year, they were opposed to this too. This is why it hasn't gone anywhere. You know, and the funny thing is that, you know, so much of the industry, so much of the things that have been destroyed were of Russian background. So much of their, you know, they didn't build the Ukrainian government didn't build a power plant. They didn't build much of anything. Everything they have there was Russian built or even Soviet built. And which is what another reason that Putin has been very careful in terms of warfare. That's, you know, that's their own property. The only reason that Ukraine could claim to have any industry at all prior to the war is because of the Russians.
That's a bit rich to be claiming reparations for something that's been damaged that isn't even yours in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they're doing, isn't it? Well, getting back to the article here, following Russia's special operation in Ukraine, the European Union and G7 countries froze nearly half of Russia's foreign reserves, around 300 billion euros. Over 200 billion are held in the European Union, mostly in the accounts of Belgium's Euroclear, one of the largest clearing systems in the world. So they're saying that this is half of Russia's foreign reserves. Does that mean money that's been, that Russian money that's been invested in business ventures in the West, Matt? What does it mean by foreign reserves? I'm sorry, I'm a bit ignorant on there on the precise definition.
Well, foreign reserves has to do with the fact that Russia is a creditor nation, and has been for a long time since Putin took over. And once you're a creditor nation, you can build up reserves. So, and within Russia, I mean, these are just the reserves that are external. I think half is an exaggeration. But if Russia's economy were to just vaporize today, it could still function for several years. You know, in the U.S., that would be impossible. In Belgium itself, it would very much be impossible. That number, the 300 billion, it's always all over the place. And so it's not merely that you know, they're at war with Russia. They've declared war on Russia many years ago. It's not just that, but now they want to actually spend this stuff. But it's also an embarrassment. How many times have the media claimed that the Russian economy is going to collapse? It seems like once a month, not so much anymore, but once a month. And I actually have a paper on this, and I have all the links. All these economists, all the big universities, especially the Ivy Leagues, are claiming this over and over and over again, and it never happens. So now, in confiscating this, well, they think maybe they'll make it happen, which of course is not the case. Keep in mind that the Russians have nationalized, as of now, maybe about 100 billion of Western assets in Russia that have been there prior to the sanctions. So it's not like they didn't make, which has not made the press very much.
So what you're saying, let me just interrupt there a bit, Matt. So what you're saying is there's like a tit-for-tat thing going on. So Russia has also frozen all American assets, all European assets that were in Russia, which possibly come to a similar amount of value. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think it's between 80 and 110 billion euros. I was talking about this last night. So it's not like they don't have a retaliatory, but even if this happens, even if this occurs, Russia's not going to be affected. They are now, as of last year, the fourth largest economy in the world. And they've surpassed, and no one predicted this, of course, except for, the guy you're talking to. But yeah, this is, I think the Western assets were, these numbers always change depending on who you talk to. The media loves to exaggerate these things, but I think the Russians have already nationalized, at least, 20 or 30 billion worth of Western assets. And they'll keep doing it so long as this is going on.
So the West is really cutting off its nose to spite its face. I mean, it's been doing that since the beginning by cutting off the cheap oil to Germany, which has destroyed the German economy, destroying the pipeline for Russian gas into Germany. Again, it's just destroyed the cheap gas that Europe was expecting to get. It's not getting it anymore. So it seems that all these measures that they're taking against Russia are really harming the West just as much as they are harming Russia. And this measure here is damaging the whole financial system. The second article we've got here is from about a year ago. And again, it's from Sputnik Globe. And the headline is "Giving Frozen Russian Assets to Ukraine Would Break the Global Financial System." Late last week, it was reported in US media that some top Republicans in the US House of Representatives were developing a plan that would loan Ukraine money from the $300 billion in Russian assets that were frozen by the United States following the start of the special operation in Ukraine. Giving Russia's seized assets to Ukraine would break the global financial system, journalist and author Dan Lazare told Sputnik's The Critical Hour on Tuesday. He also warned that it would be the equivalent of the United States declaring war on Russia. It's a very dangerous step, Lazare warned. It's really quite amazing that the whole system is just running downhill at a remarkably increasing speed. Seizing Russian assets will spook Saudi Arabia, and it'll spook China. The whole global financial system sort of rests on a kind of lawful sense of cooperation. But if you break that, then you break the whole system. It's kind of a declaration. It's a widening of the war, and it's a declaration of war on Russia by the United States, he added later. So some strong words there. And also one of the bits that I queried with Matt before we started this podcast was the fact that they're saying that America seized the Russian assets here, the $300 billion in Russian assets. But we were told in that other article that it was the G7 and the EU. So I think what they're saying is that it's held by all of them. It was probably an American order that went out to seize that money. And it's held by everybody in the G7, everybody in the EU, and it's actually held within that Euroclear clearinghouse, which is in that first article where they were saying, look, you can't have this. This is absolutely criminal. You can't just take this money. So what do you think of what's being said here, Matt? Do you think it would be seen as a declaration of war by Russia if America was to take that money and give it to Ukraine?
Well, the U.S., you know, even if you go back to my old website, the American Journal of Russian and Slavic Studies, which is on archive, you can see that I've been talking about the U.S. declaring war on Russia back in the Obama administration. It's declared war on Russia in a million different ways. This is nothing new. The use of terrorism as official policy by what's left of the Ukrainian military, you know, that was okayed, greenlit, in fact, even created by the U.S. So declaring war, well, it's just another way that they've declared war. And again, he mentions Saudi Arabia and China. These are two governments that we can both picture coming under sanctions at any moment. You know, China maybe over Taiwan, Saudi Arabia over Israel, or, you know, even though they're being very cooperative now, in the future, maybe not. So that means there, when that happens, they'll lose that money. I don't know how much they have invested. Belgium itself, as a country, is one of the most indebted countries in the world. Last I checked, it was something like their debt was like 200 or 300% of GDP. And so debt is something that, but, you know, it shows you that the governments really don't matter in these cases. They act as an enforcement mechanism only. Yeah, declaring war, well, that's old news. That's happened a long time ago. And there is, you know, what he says here, lawful sense of cooperation, not necessarily, you know, something contract, you know, contractual or anything like that. But it's just understood. We invest, you know, you don't take it, you know, and vice versa. It's you know, this is when the issue first hit a couple of years ago, it didn't shock me all that much. This is how the West functions. This is what the West does. It's broken every treaty it's ever had with Russia. Whenever it suits them. So this is simply how the West functions. And they keep talking about, you know, international law and rules, the rule-based order and everything else, and they don't believe it at all. And this is just one example. So any country that fears that it may at some point get into trouble with the West, and you never know what's going to happen, sanctions here, sanctions there. And keep in mind that at least under the Biden administration, countries like any country that assists Russia in breaking sanctions, which is that's a lot of countries, India chief among them, will also be sanctioned. So what happens to their assets? You know, it's really come to bite them. It's really as you said early on, like everything else the West is trying to do, it's a boomerang. It's hit them far more than the Russians. You know, it's like this peace deal. You know, if you do certain things, we'll allow you to rejoin the G7. Well, why the hell would they want to do that? They're stronger than the G7. Their whole economy now is based on Eastern investment. It had nothing to do with that sinking ship of Western Europe. So, you know, even if this goes through, even if they somehow, you know, get rid of Orban, and Orban has to be worried about this, even if they do it, the Russian economy is not going to be affected all that much. But it'll just be one more reason for the Saudis, or the Chinese, or anyone else to avoid investing in Europe.
That's financial fraud, isn't it, really? I mean, the whole of civilization is based upon people honoring contracts. And what they're saying here is, well, you lend me this money and we'll make all this money for you. Oh, I've fallen out with you now, so we don't have to pay you. We're going to keep all of that. That's what they're doing at a large scale. You know, you just couldn't do that. Your country would fall apart if people were to start doing that. Getting back to the article here, Lazar reminded co-hosts Ted Rall and Angie Wong that last year the Biden administration was triumphant about Ukraine's accomplishments on the battlefield a year ago, but that things have since turned sharply negative. The Ukrainian forces are starting to come apart. I think the word crumble is probably too strong a term at this point, but they certainly are showing the strain, he explained. They're running out of artillery shells, they're running out of other armaments, and Russia is making steady advances. So the question is now, how long will this process go on before Ukraine cracks? Lazar said that the situation in Ukraine has US President Joe Biden scared as hell, that he has no idea how to get around the roadblock of Congress blocking further financial aid. It's really hard to believe that the US will allow Ukraine to sink beneath the waves, but that seems to be what's happening, he added. That means abandoning very close allies, Lazar said, especially given the fact that the US really caused this war in the first place by backing a far-right-led military coup back in 2014, which made a Russian military response more or less inevitable. And I remember this when this was going on. This was just before Donald Trump took office, and there was a big roadblock in Congress, wasn't there, because the Republicans were refusing to fund this any longer. They have continued to fund it for another year, and now we're back in this exactly the same situation. You know, Ukraine cannot fight against Russia without being funded by somewhere else. They can't afford to actually fight this war themselves. So to say that they're just going to take Russia's money for this on the proviso that Russia will agree to pay reparations, it's like cloud cuckoo land that's going to happen. It's just theft on a grand scale, isn't it?
Well, even if they go through with this, somehow they get around the Hungarian veto and they all agree, even though they don't at the moment, it's not going to matter. First of all, the weapons aren't there. The West is tapped out in terms of its production. This war has, you know, in my book, which is just been released, it's not quite public yet, on the Ukraine war, goes into great detail about this, about not just, you know, Ukraine just is like Israel, but also that the West doesn't, no matter how much money they have, simply doesn't have the production. Russia has blown them away in the military production battle. That's why I call this like a new Crimean War, not a new Cold War. And the far right, yeah, this is not a far right anything. That irritated me when he said this. It was also not a military coup, although I do believe Ukraine's only hope is a military coup. Right now, Ukraine doesn't have really a functional economy. It's been third world since the 90s, and it's only gotten worse since then. They're massive brain drain. They're intellectuals. Remember, Ukraine is the best educated country in the world. In other words, it has the highest proportion of those with advanced degrees than any other country on the planet. Very scientifically minded. So many of those people are gone. Some of them have even been drafted. You know, but calling this far right is or a military coup is absolutely nonsense. So there's no local economy to continue the war on their own. There's no way. But anything that could be said about Ukraine could be said about NATO. And again, in my book, that's one of the we'll talk about this more when it actually becomes publicly available. But it's finished, thank God. That's one of my big theses, one of the things that I argue. It really just doesn't matter. Anything that could be said of Ukraine could be said of NATO. NATO is a paper tiger. So even if this happens, it's not going to matter. And I don't know, even if it happens, even if they had the weapons, who knows where they would end up? Probably not the front. You know, that's been fully admitted, even in Kiev, that a lot of this aid has disappeared. And the West is aware of this. It's paid back its debt in blood.
They're mired in a corruption scandal at the moment, aren't they, with one of Zelensky's top aides, one of his closest aides, that's had to resign in a huge corruption scandal. It's just corruption after corruption. I think they think at least half the money that's gone there is can't actually be accounted for. This is the final article, and this brings us back up to date again. This is from yesterday, and the title is Belgium Disagrees with EU Commission's Proposal to Use Russian Assets, Foreign Minister. Belgium categorically disagrees with the European Commission's proposal to use Russian assets, considering it extremely risky, Belgian Foreign Minister Maxime Prevot said on Wednesday. We have repeatedly said that we consider the option of the reparations loan the worst of all, as it is risky and it has never been done before, Prevot told reporters ahead of the NATO Foreign Affairs Ministerial meeting. Belgium believes it is being asked to show solidarity regarding the use of Russian assets, without being offered the same solidarity in return, the foreign minister added. Everyone can see how difficult it has been for months to find a robust solution to the proposed option. This explains why we keep on pleading for an alternative, namely the EU borrowing the amount needed on the markets, Prevot also said. And that's the legal option, isn't it? If the EU wants to keep this war going, then they need to be borrowing the money and paying for it, not stealing another country's money and finding some way to pay for it there. And also, it's Belgium that will lose out here, because it's Belgium that will lose the prestige of this bank actually being trustworthy, which is obviously one of the biggest banks, this Euroclear or whatever it is. What do you make of what the foreign minister has to say here, Matt?
Yeah, it surprised me, because up until recently, I thought it was really just the Hungarian veto that kept them from, disbursing this money. I don't know what he means by a robust solution. But I think what he's hinting at is that there's a plan to borrow money using Russian assets as collateral. Well, of course, these people, the very same people who own, these are the same central banks that own the assets. BlackRock is central here, but because no one in the EU agrees on what to do, and the very fact, corruption scandal, the entire regime is based on corruption and has no legitimacy at all. A scandal doesn't mean very much. The entire regime is based on it. Zelensky and his inner circle, which are all Jews, have netted about $100 million in assets since this war started. Zelensky just bought a beautiful condo in Dubai, which is where a lot of the Jews in Israel are fleeing to, after it was flattened by the Iranians, proving that he has no hope in any of this. So Belgium is extremely upset. The Germans are somewhat Hungary just vetoes this over and over again. And there is no agreement, which is why it just sits there. My personal opinion, Russia should simply nationalize everything Western in its territory. And that could probably make up for it very easily, or come very close to it. So it's not like they don't have weapons. It's Putin is always loath to take Germany. You know, he always had a soft spot for them. He's always very popular there. But as you know, this very journal is banned in the European Union, Sputnik, and this is part of the reason. So that's all the EU needs is to borrow money, try to use this as collateral. You know, it's just, you know, the whole thing is, yeah, like you say, it's just fantasy land. Because even if everything worked out, it's not going to matter. Ukraine's finished. They've been finished since the fall of 22. They're held together. It's like with glue and tape. This war should have ended then. And the slaughter of untrained Ukrainian men is not something that Putin ever wanted. That's why he moved very slowly. He didn't want to, you know, these are orthodox boys. You know, it was the last thing he wanted, but the West insists that this continue. And we have to pray that Poland is not then the next Ukraine, which there's been some rumblings in my book. I talk about that as well, that they're going to use Poland. And you have people in military circles who not all of them, but some of them agree with that. Can you imagine? Russia is the premier military in the world. You know, they're battle hardened. Their whole system works like just one big machine now. Yeah, there's some trouble in the beginning. Putin underestimated the obsession of the West. Which is why, you know, and now you're talking about almost 2 million Ukrainian dead. And it doesn't matter, it doesn't bother these people. So what 100 billion gonna do? Even if they had the weapons, where is it going? It's not something that I relish talking about, because it's, you know, the cover of my book is a graveyard, which are all over the place with Ukrainian flags in every grave. It's you know, it's what they're doing now is simply a war crime. So it's more than just this financial fraud, which of course it is, but keeping this war going, sending mercenaries from all over the world there, just to maintain it. You know, Ukraine is just grabbing now women off the street and sending them to the front. This is something. This is almost unprecedented. In historically, you know, this war should have ended in, I would say, early fall of 22. Ukraine started taking massive losses, but the West said no. And even once they realized that the war was lost, well, maybe we could still hurt Russia somehow. And so we'll send hundreds of thousands to their deaths. But in the process, maybe we'll kill a few more Russians. As Lindsey Graham said, that disgusting human being, killing Russians was really the purpose at this point, which is why they're using terrorism, which is why they're hitting civilian targets. So this is a fraud at many levels. And Again, I don't want to keep plugging it, but my book goes into great detail as to why. But I have to tell you, my book doesn't really deal with this topic very much, precisely because in a military point of view, it really doesn't make any difference.
Getting back to the last few paragraphs of the article, the European Commission has been seeking to get the EU countries to use frozen Russian assets to finance Ukraine. On November 8th, media reported that the amount involved stands at around 140 billion euros in the form of a reparation loan, which Ukraine will conditionally have to repay after the end of the conflict and in case of compensation for material damage from Moscow. On November 27th, Russian President Vladimir Putin said that the confiscation of immobilized Russian assets would be considered as theft of property and undermine confidence in the Eurozone. He always just flatly says exactly what it is Putin does. No flowery language. It's just, that's just theft, and it will undermine confidence in the Eurozone. And what he says there is exactly what will happen if they end up doing that. Matt, what are your final thoughts on this today?
Well, they know that they're even if this goes through, they'll never see this money. Ukraine simply doesn't have a functional economy. The industrialized East is already part of Russia. The title of my book fully is Borhi Splatini Krovyu, meaning debts are paid in blood. There's no, they've taken the land, they've taken most of everything of value, they've taken state assets that have been privatized. So what do they have left? What do they have left? They have left their boys, their men, the best of their men. And that's how they're repaying this debt. Because even years ago, the Ukrainian economy was third world, which it should be the very opposite. And the IMF is still lending money. They know they're never going to see this again. They know it's not going to go to what they say it goes to. So how can they repay? Well, again, they're taking the land. They've taken state assets. There's no more, and they're destroying this land, by the way, for GMO, some of the most fertile land in the world. They're fracking there, whatever they want. What do they have left to repay these loans? Well, blood. And this is, this is really the criminal nature of all of this.
Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.